This is PCJ Radio International.
Well, hello, friends and listeners, and welcome to another edition of Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. I'm Keith Perron. Today on the program, we're going to be joined by someone who is well known in the world of international broadcasting. For more than 20 years, he worked at Radio Canada International. He hosted a wide variety of programs, from listener club programs, DX programs, and current affairs shows, as well as reading the news from time to time. I'm talking about Ian McFarland. Now, Ian McFarland retired from broadcasting after he spent a couple of years in Japan. He was for a time at Radio Japan when RCI had an exchange program with them. After he retired, well, he's been quite busy. He does a lot of charity work in his hometown in British Columbia, and also has been very busy releasing a CD series made up of interval signals. Back in the 1970s, he did this CD series to help listeners identify stations. Now, for example, if a station, for example, was not in English or French, or even Spanish, they may have a station in Russian, and they would run the interval signal, and he'd say, this is a Russian station, and this is where their name is, and this is where they're from. Now, this series was very successful. It was even sold on cassette for a short time. Now, Ian decided to release them on CD. Now, they were so well-received that they released another CD and then another one. Our very special guest today is Ian McFarland. My first question to him was, how did this idea all come about?
Well, I got the idea that a lot of people would enjoy hearing a large number of different ident signals. Because, of course, if you're a DXer, a lot of these ident signals, you can hear them, but you don't really know what they are or where they're coming from. So I decided to put a series together, and we had about 100... a couple over 100 of these ident signals and interval signals and ident announcements. And, of course, a lot of them are in foreign languages. And a lot of DXers, if they only speak English, they're not going to understand a Russian ident announcement or any other language. So I figured this is a good way to get people familiar with an ident signal. And once they've heard it, on the program, they can put it away in their memory, or they can tape it themselves at home, and then they could identify the station if they ever came across it on the shortwave bands. And it was a very popular series, and it ran for a number of months, because I only ran about maybe two or three a week on the program.
Now, when you were putting it together, how did you compile the material for it? You didn't sit by a radio yourself and record stuff, right?
No. Some of them I got our monitoring station in Stittsville. That's RCI's monitoring station in Stittsville, to record quite a few of them. The others I got directly from the stations involved. Radio Moscow supplied quite a few, and the BBC, and a number of other stations, so we got good, clear signal on those. It wasn't all full of static and fading, so it gave people a good idea of what it sounded like.
Do you remember some of the most unusual stations?
Well, there were a few of the regional USSR stations that I got, because Radio Moscow gave me quite a grab bag of different station identification signals, and a lot of these you couldn't get off shortwave because they were so hard to hear, at least in North America they were. So this was a great help, and that Soviet part of the series ran to quite a few. There were probably about 15 different idents from the USSR at that time.
You know, here in Asia, there are some very unusual ones that I can pick up. The most interesting ones seem to be coming from, like, the Philippines, where they have, I don't know why they're doing this, but they put so much reverb on the interval signals that it sounds like the person is in an echo chamber in a recording studio. It's very funny. And also, of course, the ones from the DPRK in North Korea.
Well, a lot of those are just bad recordings to begin with, I guess, and there's nothing you can do to get around that. And of course, it's further aggravated or degraded by the fact that you're hearing it on shortwave. So unless it's a really good recording to begin with, what you're going to get, say, in North America from Asia, is not going to sound all that good. And that was the advantage that this series had. You got a good, clear signal on these idents.
Well, let's move to today, because you did the first series, Series 1, a few years ago. How was this something that you had wanted to do for a long time?
No, I had the idea. It was just the fact that I ran it in the mid-1970s on the program, and then subsequently I put them on cassette tapes, and they were sold by the Handicapped Aid Program to raise funds for that program. And that, of course, about 15 or 20 years later, I thought to myself, well, there are going to be a lot of new shortwave listeners that might be interested in this ident series. So Colin and I decided to put it out on a CD. And it sold quite a few copies. Between that series and the second CD set that we put out, we raised about $2,000. And these sales are a fundraising means of fundraising for the food bank in Duncan, British Columbia that I volunteer with. Mm-hmm. So it raised quite a bit of money for the food bank.
Right. Colin, let's move to you for a moment. I mean, what was it like putting together this series? And can you give me a little bit of your background as a shortwave listener?
Certainly. I've been a broadcast listener and shortwave listener since about 1971 or 72. I was, in fact, a very young fan of Ian McFarland in the mid-70s and was a regular listener to one of his shows. So I probably heard the Interval Signal series when it first came out in the mid to late 70s. I actually have some original cassette recordings of those. Of course, 25, 35 years ago, they're, you know, old and kind of scratchy cassette tapes. So I now had the original reel-to-reel tape of the Interval Signals, you know, fresh from the studio to use as a remastering material for the CD. So it was quite a blast from the past to have these reels of tape in my hand and put some pretty solid copies onto CD. The bulk of the email I've had from a lot of people that were buying the CDs were saying the same thing. It's like, we're hearing this shortwave material and these Interval Signals like we've never heard them before, and it feels so good to go back in time for a moment, back in the shortwave heyday of the mid-70s.
I should add at this point, Keith, that I've always been a bit of a pack rat. So when I retired from RCI in 1991, I still had all of the tapes from the major series that I ran on the program over the years. I had the ident signal on the original tapes that I used on the air. And also another popular series that I ran on the air was the language recognition course. Mm-hmm. And that was part of the second set of CDs that we put out. So between one thing and another, we've got a lot of archive material to put onto CDs that will be a bit of nostalgia for my listeners from the 70s onwards, and also something which will be relatively fresh for anybody who's only been listening for the last 10 years or so, because I haven't been on the air since, I guess, 1993.
So, you know, when you were putting this material together, how did you decide what to put in? I mean, obviously there's so much. You didn't include everything, did you?
No, that's a virtually impossible task. I wrote to virtually every shortwave station in the world, and of course a lot of them replied, but a lot of them didn't. So the mm-hmm. ones who didn't weren't included in the series, unless we were able to record it through Stittsville, our receiving station near Ottawa. Mm-hmm. So it was the ones that were left out were not left out intentionally. It's just that we didn't record those at Stittsville, or the station in question didn't reply to our request.
Well, now you have Series 3, and this one is titled Then and Now. Tell me a bit about that.
Well, the basis of this particular CD series is a joint program that I did back in, the mid-70s, I guess, or the mid-80s. I can't remember now. I've got a very bad memory for dates. But it was a program, a joint program that Bob Zanotti and I did. Bob Zanotti, of course, was with Swiss Radio International. And we took every opportunity to do joint programs. And we did quite a few of them. And this particular joint program, and the date occurs to me now, was 1989, which a lot of listeners will remember was the year that the Berlin Wall came tumbling down, the end of communism.
And also the Tiananmen Square incident.
Yeah. Well, we did a joint program. We were both attending an international broadcasting conference in West Berlin at that time. It was still a West and an East Berlin in 1989. And we recorded that and did a joint program. Some of it was on Swiss Radio International, and the other was on Radio Canada International. So I still had the original tapes from that. So that is what is on the new CD series. And we also did an update on that because, of course, that's 20 years ago now, and an awful lot has changed in the last 20 years in the world of shortwave broadcasting. So we did an updated look at what's happened in the last 20 years to international broadcasting on shortwave. And taking part in that was Kim Andrew Elliott of the Voice of America. He used to be the host and producer of Communications World. He's now working as an audience research officer at the IBB, the International Board of Broadcasting. And also John Figliozzi, an American who is a very prolific writer on the subject of shortwave and a very avid shortwave listener. And, of course, there was Bob Zanotti involved as well, and Colin Newell. And so we had a roundtable discussion to try and analyze just what has happened in the world of shortwave broadcasting over the last 20 years. Because, of course, back in 1989, it was nothing but good news as far as shortwave broadcasting was concerned, and everything was gung-ho. But, of course, a lot has come down the road since 1989 in that branch of broadcasting, and a lot of stations that were on the air back then are no longer with us.
There's one of the companies that is supplying me with two radios to give away, Sanjen, which you definitely know. I was talking to their sales manager, and he said after the first Gulf War in the early 90s, he said because of the CNN coverage, he said they saw a drop in sales of shortwave radios. He said satellite television has had a really big impact.
Yeah, that often happens, but the reverse also happens. And in the time of international crises, there is a big increase in international broadcast listening because that's mm-hmm. virtually, at one point, was the only way you'd get any news was to hear it on shortwave. But, of course, 24-hour news stations like CNN, which also has a European branch, they're covering the news 24 hours a day. So really, these days, you don't have to listen on shortwave as much.
Well, you know, Ian, when you were working on this series, was there part of you that was feeling very nostalgic?
Well, it was a very long process. It probably took about 6 months to put that series together. And I really feel more nostalgic now than I did at that point because so many of these ident signals no longer exist because the stations have gone off the air. I mean, just mm-hmm. take Swiss Radio International, for instance. They're no longer mm-hmm. in existence. A lot of what Radio Austria used to put on the air is gone now, especially their North American service. So many European stations have ceased broadcasting to North America. The only way you can get it is via the internet. And there's one story that I've told many, many times, which illustrates the great value of shortwave. Somebody I know was in Beijing at the time of the Tiananmen Square incident, and he was in a hotel not far from Tiananmen Square, and he was having trouble sleeping about 2 o'clock in the morning. and he could hear gunfire off in the distance. And he, of course, didn't have a clue what was happening. So he just flipped on his shortwave radio and tuned into the BBC and discovered right then and there via shortwave exactly what was happening about four blocks from his hotel room. Right. But he wouldn't have found out any other way.
You know, Jeff White was telling me a funny story. He said a few years ago, when the Voice of America dropped Portuguese to Brazil because they'd signed an agreement with a local Brazilian broadcaster to have their signal relayed on FM and AM, he said the year before they stopped their shortwave, they had a contest to win just a shortwave radio, and they literally got thousands of people writing in. So for the launch of their domestic relay, the first prize was a 1 week trip to Washington, all expenses paid. And he said the VOA was kind of shocked because they received only two letters.
Yes, there are shocks like that. I can remember a similar shock. I had a program called Canada a la carte at one point.
I remember that.
On RCI. And it was a magazine program. We covered a great variety of topics. And I had in my mind, stamp collecting is one of the world's most popular hobbies. So I figured, and we had a stamp corner feature on the program talking about different issues of Canadian stamps, because many, many years ago, Canadian stamps were amongst the most dull stamps in the world. And Canada Post finally got the idea that they should zap up their stamps a little bit. So I ran a contest on the Canada a la carte program, and I offered full sheets of a number of different Canadian stamps, very nice Canadian stamps. So I ran this contest on the program over a four-week period, and I had one letter as an entry to the contest.
Mm-hmm.
And you know who the letter was from?
No.
It was from Jeff White. when he was just a plain, ordinary listener. I first met Jeff in 1974 when he was involved with a shortwave listening club in Chicago and invited me to be a guest speaker one year at their annual convention. But I can remember Jeff said in his letter, "Here's my entry. At least you've had one entry in the contest." And as it turned out, his entry was the only one I had in the contest. So from then on, I didn't consider that stamp collecting was one of the world's most popular hobbies, at least not with my listeners anyway.
Do you think the time will come when stations will start making comebacks? Because we've seen some shortwave stations add frequencies when maybe just a few years ago they were dropping them like flies, but now they're adding a few more here and there. Do you see that happening more often?
Well, I don't know, but it's the old story, what goes around comes around. And every so often there is a new golden age of radio, certainly on domestic radio in Canada here. Every so often you have a new golden age of radio. And I can't see that this can't happen in the world of international broadcasting on shortwave, because I think, as a lot of people think, a lot of stations, I know Bob Zanotti was very hot on this with Swiss Radio International, they're just putting too many eggs in the internet basket, because mm-hmm. there are an awful lot of parts of the world that don't have access to the internet. And in some parts of the world, in Europe, for instance, you have to use a dial-up connection. And that, of course, precludes you using your telephone if you have a dial-up yeah. connection. So, and it's also very expensive, because in Europe, they pay by the minute, not like in North America. You just pay a lump sum every month, and you can get an unlimited number of local calls. Your long distance is extra, of course, but if you have a dial-up connection, it certainly cramps your style quite a bit. So I can see that perhaps in another 5 years or 10 years, who knows, that there may be a resurgence in the interest in international broadcasting on shortwave on the part of the stations. But of course,
you know,
a lot of the stations have gone off the air completely, like Swiss Radio International. So they really can't come back on shortwave because they've done away with all their transmitters.
And that was my conversation with RCI broadcaster Ian McFarland. For more information on that series, I invite you to check out the website that is selling them. The URL is www.dxer.ca. That's DXER.ca. So if you want to listen to something nostalgic and listen to something very interesting, I would suggest ordering them. And of course, all money goes to a very good cause, a food bank in British Columbia. Now, I just want to tell you about a couple of program notes of things that were going to be happening here at PCJ Radio International. Last week on the program, I informed you that we were changing our frequency of 11990, targeting listeners in Southeast and East Asia. We moved to 9705 kHz. This was done because of interference that we had on the original frequency of 11835 and then again on 11990. Well, 9705 was, how would I put it, appalling. We had so much interference from China National Radio that in many parts of East Asia, the signal was virtually inaudible. Beginning this Sunday, the 24th of November, we've changed frequency again. Our new frequency is 9335 kHz. That's 9335 kHz. And that's for listeners in South and Southeast Asia. This week, by the way, on Happy Station, we have a very special program. Because on November the 19th, this past Tuesday, it marked the 85th anniversary of the Happy Station show. The first show went on the air in 1928. So we have a special edition of Happy Station this week that's going to be going into the archives and, well, taking a listen to things that probably haven't been broadcast in about 85 years. And that's coming up this Sunday at 1330 UTC on 9335 kHz. Now, the same program will be targeting our listeners who tune in through our partner stations on FM and medium wave. And if you don't have access to that, you can also, of course, listen at any time through our website at www.pcjmedia.com. On December the 1st, we're going to be preempting all our programming and doing something very special. For 30 minutes, we're going to be bringing to you an experimental half hour of radio. Experimental how, you're asking? Well, we're going to be broadcasting some radiograms in different modes, some Morse code, some other strange noises, and pictures and video. Now, the video that we're going to be broadcasting is original video from the 1920s. That's right, the 1920s. Original video footage from John Logie Bird, the father of the mechanical television set. And that's going to be on December 1st from 1330 to 14 hours UTC. For more details, you can visit our website, www.pcjmedia.com, and we will put information in there, how you can decode all the modes and everything else. So it should be rather fun. I've been describing it to people as sort of, you know, think of the airwaves as a canvas. And we're going to be painting that canvas for half an hour. Now, you may not be able to decode it, but it is going to be very interesting to listen to. I guarantee that. So December 1st, from 1330 to 14 hours UTC, targeting listeners in South and Southeast Asia. Now, because we're going to be broadcasting radiograms and various different modes and digital signals and all that, believe it or not, what is amazing is that perhaps voice may not get through so clearly, but if you broadcast a radiogram, it goes further. So I know the last time we did a test, we were getting listeners that were so far out of the target area, they couldn't hear my introduction to the settings, but the radiogram and the other, you know, things went through. So it'll be interesting to see how many of you will be able to decode the video that we're sending out. A very simple video, by the way, very, very simple, using a 30-line scanner, very similar to that of John Logie Bird that he used in the 1920s. Very, very low-tech. But it should be a lot of fun. As I told people before, one of the things with shortwave is you have to put the fun back into shortwave. Now, hopefully propagation will be on our side, And what can we expect? Well, here's our propagation editor taking a look at the next 7 days, Dan Hensley.
Here's propagation for the week from November 23rd to November 29th, 2013. 10.7 centimeter flux November 23rd, 150. 140 on November 24th and 25th. November 26th and 27th, 135. 140 on November 28th, up to 145 on November 29th. The A-index study all week long at 5 from November 23rd to November 29th. KP-index study at 2 all week long, November 23rd to the 29th. All of last week's sunspots are rotating out of view in the sun's far eastern edge, including sunspot 1900, leaving us with one sunspot, 1903, to the sun's western hemisphere. No coronal holes have been observed this week. Departing sunspot 1893, not AR 1897 as previously reported, erupted on November 19th, producing an X1 class solar flare. NASA's Solar Dynamics Observatory recorded the explosion's extreme ultraviolet flash at 10:26 UT. For more, please see our website at www.pcjmedia.com/rprop. Back to you, Keith.
All right, thank you very much, Dan. Well, guess what? We are now out of time. If you wish to contact us to let us know what you think of the program, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is very simple, mnp@pcjmedia.com. Once again, mnp@pcjmedia.com. You can listen to this program again or catch past editions by visiting our website, www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus, all one word. Next week, there are going to be two editions of the program. As you're probably aware, on the last Saturday of every month, we bring a monthly one-hour edition. So hopefully you can join us for that, and also the weekly program. So on behalf of the whole team that helped put the program together, I'm Keith Powell, wishing you well. We'll see you again in 7 days' time. 73 and 88 to the ladies.
It is such a good night to kiss. It is such a good night to dance. It is such a good night to scooby-dee-doo-dee-doo, 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 love. It is such a good night to kiss. It is such a good night to dance. It is such a good night to scooby-dee-doo-dee-doo, 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 love.